Please be seated.
Good afternoon. Now we'll pick up where we left off. Mr. Wilson, you've had a chance to peruse over the lunch break the recommendations from Ms. Dicey in relation to the proposed methodology. Are you able to highlight for the court any differences between the methodology that she proposes and the methodology put forward by Ms. Perkins and or the council?
Yes, I can. I found, read through at lunchtime, three differences other than the annual volume which we've already canvassed. The first is a slight difference in the process for dealing with margin of error, and that Ms. Dicey says this will be specified on your consent or latest verification. If you can't find this specified anywhere, use 5% when the meter is located on the pipe take and 10% when it's open
down.
Channel. Sorry.
Sorry,
page 83.
Page what?
83. Footnote 39.
It's a footnote?
Yes.
Okay, and so in the footnote number 39. Oh, okay. Let me just get into that. Go ahead. So,
I don't think that's a particularly material difference. It probably more closely matches the notified version of Plan Change 7, but we've suggested an amendment to simplify discussions around the margin of error, which is more close to what Lambrope suggests, which is just 5% for pipe take, 10% for open channel.
And do those margins of error reflect the water metering regulations and the margins of error?
Yes, they do.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is that Ms. Dicey doesn't specifically discuss what to do when there's no written limit. So deemed permits, for example, will have a limit for rate of take, but they don't have, most of them don't have volume limits. And so Schedule 10A4 specifies what to treat as the volume limit when there is no volume limit defined on the consent. And I think LANPRO matches that.
And LANPRO matches?
Matches the council Schedule 10A4.
Or can LANPRO match in terms of what to happen if no volume limit? And that can be anything, daily, monthly, annual?
Yeah, it's different steps for each, but it can be any of them. I believe LANPRO do. Sorry, I didn't.
If you could just take me to where LANPRO says that.
So there's no page numbers, but in their schedule 10A42.2.
I've got 10A4.2.
Yeah, 10A4.2,
yeah.
Then 0.2 below that.
Mm. Okay.
And then over the page, 10A4.3.1. Over the page again, 10A4.4.1.
Okay. So what's the issue? Oh, sorry. Any other differences?
So the only other difference, and this one probably is more material, is that Ms. Dicey doesn't include discussion for a daily limit.
I
where LandPro and the council do.
Sorry?
Where LandPro and the council both do.
So the daily limits are omitted
completely? Yes.
Yeah, okay. All right. Okay. Do you want to tease out what the differences might be in terms of those omissions?
Yes, I wonder whether we might work through each of those and would be interested in your opinion as to the materiality of those differences.
Sure.
So starting with the first identified difference, which...
margin of error?
Yes.
I don't think that's materially different. It's very likely to end up at the same place of 5%.
Which is this? I didn't catch that.
Margin of error.
So. The margin of error, so that's your footnote 39?
Yes.
Okay, so that's... Do we know why in this diocese evidence that's been omitted? Or that there is a difference there, or do we not know?
I don't know. It does more closely match the council's initial drafting, which at a second read-through... stood to be improved, hence our recommendations.
Okay, and so there's a question here whether the footnote 39 in Ms. Dicey's proposed method is a material change or not. Probably needs to be discussed. Yep.
Okay, so the second identified difference.
I think that's more material. Because you start getting into, say, step four, if any daily volume measurement exceeds the authorised daily volume constraint on the existing consent cap, that daily volume... Sorry, I don't think that quite follows. But if you don't define what the limit is when there's no limit expressed, then I'd assume you're only using if there is a limit expressed.
This is step four, H.
It applies to... step four, step five, and step six.
So if you were to turn that into a question that you might usefully explore in conferencing, how would you frame that question?
I guess it would be, how should the method deal with authorised limits where none has been set on the document or permit?
And that's the document or permit being replaced?
Being replaced, yes. Yeah.
When you say authorised limits, do you mean both limit including, so this is the rate of take and volumes, you're actually talking about both, or what do you mean?
I haven't seen a water take without a rate of take limit on it.
Yep.
It generally applies to volumes.
So authorised limits, so brackets volumes, where none specified on a permit.
Yeah, so your traditional deem permit will be for a number of heads of water, which we can translate into litres per second, but it doesn't include volume limits. So we treat it as you can take it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year, in terms of calculating a limit.
And you say this is missing. Why? What are you pointing to, or what can't you see that, for example, you can see in your own or you can see in LandPro?
So there are steps in LandPro's and there are steps in my own that define what to do when there is no limit
in
the document,
yeah.
And I can't see a matching step in this diocese. Yeah.
Right, it's the absence of the what to do step. Okay. So, because if you haven't got those that, how to fill in the gap, if you like, for the volume, then how do you implement this method?
Yeah, how do you work out what's an exceedance if you haven't defined what the limit is?
Yeah. And for many deemed permits, this method is not going to be workable, is I think what your evidence is. It's just simply not going to work because for many deemed permits, they won't have those volumes.
Correct. Yes.
So it falls over at that stage.
Yes.
And maybe it was intended to, or maybe it wasn't. Yeah. Okay. All right.
And then the third identified difference.
So that is that I don't see a methodology for a daily volume limit. And that's material simply in that under Ms. Dicey's method, you wouldn't have a daily volume limit.
And that's not step four, so I'm obviously missing something here.
Well, that's a good point. No, step four filters the data set for daily volumes, but then if you go to 15.8.5, step one, it says from the last preceding 5 years of audited water metering data, determine the following: maximum rate of take, monthly volume and annual volume.
Okay, so that's where your dailies are missing.
Yes.
It's actually in your methodologies under 15.85.
Yeah, yeah. So the steps 1, 2, 3, 4 and 5 are about filtering the data.
Yeah.
And then 15.85 is setting the limits.
Yeah. All right. And so the question, can you reframe that again for the record, or pose the question for the record? I don't mind who does it, but what's the question? About daily limits. Should there be a daily limit?
Yeah, I don't know if we did frame one. I think it would be, should there be a daily limit? And I think if you go slightly wider... Mr. McIndoe probably raised whether there should be a monthly limit as well, from memory.
Yeah, and so that's, one of the... What's troubling myself, anyway, speaking for myself, is that Mr. McIndoe's evidence is... his recommendations are not necessarily picked up by Ms. Dicey. So Ms. Dicey does have a monthly limit. Mr. McIndoe might very well have a different opinion about that. Yeah. That'd be fair. Mr. Page, is that fair? This is the time really to speak as well in terms of, have we actually understood the differences? It's not the time to keep quiet if you know that either the witness or the court has not correctly understood what the differences are between LAMPRO, ORAG and ORC.
Yes, we've been paying careful attention to the answers that you're getting, and we're with the witness so far on what the differences are.
So you agree with the witnesses what those differences are?
Yeah. Well, in the matter that you were just addressing about whether Ms. Dicey's method has a daily limit, my recollection is no, she doesn't, because she doesn't see the need for one.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So these are not drafting mishaps. This is intentional.
Yes.
Yes.
And I understand, to assist about why that is the way that the water monitoring regulations work are effectively a daily limit anyway, because although takes permits are expressed as instantaneous takes, i.e. litres per second, that's not what the monitoring regulations monitors. It monitors daily takes. So if you've got an instantaneous, if you've got a daily record from the regulations, that's how the instantaneous take is calculated.
What would be the question coming out of that, apart from is it sufficient to say should there be a daily limit?
Yes, well that's an appropriate question. Or is any purpose served by a daily limit? Is another way of expressing the same point.
What is the purpose, and should there be one?
Yes. Because my understanding of the regulations and Ms. Dicey's evidence is that the combination of an instantaneous take and the water monitoring regulations effectively gives you a daily limit by default.
And is it an issue, and I don't know whether it is, what is the purpose of a monthly limit and should there be one? Because here she seems to have a monthly limit.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a fair question, because...
I don't know, because she, in that sense her evidence might not align with Mr. McIndoe's. And she may actually have a good reason not to pick up on everything that he says, but to go in a slightly different direction.
Yes, no, Your Honour's right about that.
Yeah, so what's the question? Where is your case going on the monthly? That there should be a monthly and this is the methodology.
Yes, well, Ms. Dicey's evidence is that there should be monthly limits, and I know that Mr. McIndoe has a different view. So to resolve that, the question will need to be posed for them to consider and report back on.
Well, I don't know about that. Is Mr. McIndoe going to be in this expert conference? Is this even an issue, if that's what your case is?
Ms. Irving shall answer that, I think
the difference... Well, Mr. McIndoe's evidence is really around the efficiency measure and what role that may or may not play in the schedule. So to that extent, I think, yes, Mr. McIndoe needs to be involved in the discussion of the methodology and whether or not where efficiency sits in that. So he deals with how does the schedule stack up against the efficiency criteria, and I suppose the question that I recall Mr. Moore asking of Mr. Wilson earlier was the operation of the schedule as a gateway with a matter of discretion associated with efficiency, or whether the schedule itself tackles the efficiency question. And in that sense, Mr. McIndoe has provided evidence on the efficiency question, I think, would need to participate in the conference. So.
And, to be fair, Ms. Dicey's actually saying the methodology should tackle the efficiency question, because that's what she says at paragraph... page 85.
Yes.
The question is the role of Mr. McIndoe in this expert conference. Is he actually got a role to play on matters beyond the Aqualink methodology, that is, matters to do with this, you know, the schedule methodology, and I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he does, because he also looks at how the period of time that you select for the monitoring data may influence the outcome and all of those kinds of issues.
All right, and so the question for the monthly, so because here Ms. Dicey's evidence is clear that there should be a monthly limit.
Yes.
He has a different view, and I've noted that.
Yes.
Didn't know where it went, because Ms. Dicey is, the case for your client is that there should be monthly limits.
Yes.
So do we have to spend time asking ourselves whether there should be monthly limits?
Well, I think for the purposes of O-Rank's case, no. Mr. McIndoe, of course, appears as an expert and expresses his opinion on that point. So he might just say, well, look, I don't think you need one, and people shrug their shoulders.
That's good, but what's the relevance to your case?
Well, I'm saying
it's not relevant.
No, from our point of view.
Okay. All right. But to be clear, I need to now have you on the same page as everybody else. Has this witness articulated what are the principal differences between ORAG and ORC, and I guess LAMPRO as well, and has this witness posed generally the questions that need to be asked and answered in an expert conference? Your answer to both questions?
Yes, I think yes they have, with respect to the irrigation issues.
Mm-hmm.
I think I raised before lunch that there hasn't yet been the conversation about the implications of the scheduled method for those other water uses, and I think particularly for the territorial authorities there's still
mm-hmm.
some work to be done on those questions, but or to bear in mind that we need to look at the implications of each of those steps for the alternative water uses that the schedule will apply to, and whether there is a different step required where we're dealing with other water uses.
And so, to be clear, what are the other water uses aside from hydroelectricity and territorial authority community based water?
I'm not aware of any. I think the only other one was snowmaking that was discussed, but I don't have clients that are interested in that topic.
All right. And there's nothing else that I should know about before referring this to expert conferencing?
Not that I can think.
All right, thank you.
So that perhaps is a convenient point at which to consider whether the issues raised by the hydroelectricity generators and the community groups and potentially the snowmaking should occur within the caucusing on the questions we've discussed today as part of that discussion. Mm. I've been reflecting a little on that over the lunch break and formed a view it might be more appropriate to see where the schedule or where the schedule might get to in terms of its relevance to the primary industry parties as a first step. And then the question will be, does that schedule then work for those other uses in light of those changes? And if not, then maybe some further adjustments or some changes to the schedule could occur in a way that doesn't upset what's been reached in terms of primary industry. But I rather suspect that it may be complicated, or it may complicate matters by introducing those experts in the first stage of conferencing. So I had it in mind that we would have a first conference in terms of the primary sector interests and then as a second stage, depending on where they reach, it may then be appropriate to ask the question, now does the schedule work for these, for the community takes and for the hydroelectricity generation?
Yep. And insofar as that the results of that conference, primary sector conference, doesn't need to come to court, if you like, as soon as it's done, it can be held on file whilst Mr Dunlop then undertakes expert conferencing for the other two or three interest groups, and then perhaps with a final overview as to where each of those four interest groups get to. We don't need to see, you know, you've got time to make adjustments as you might need to make adjustments in terms of those conference outcomes. How does that sound? Would that allay your, address your...
Yes.
Yeah? Okay, and also Mr Walsh behind you. None of this is perfect, Mr Walsh.
That was going to be my submission next Friday.
Oh, is it? It's not perfect.
Save me a trip back. Look, I think what Mr Moore said has some attraction, because whilst Mr Mitchell does cover matters that the primary industry people also cover in the schedule, he does, of course, as we were talking before lunch, come to that from a perspective of hydro. So as long as there is an opportunity, if one needs to caucus, then I'm happy if it is split and they come in later. I don't think it's efficient for our witnesses to be sitting there while they're talking about irrigation for a day or two, or three or four.
All right. No, that's fine. That sounds good. So we'll make that referral. Mr Dunlop is available. So when are your witnesses available?
They, I understand, are available over the next couple of weeks.
Okay.
So
so are we. Ms Irving, when are your witnesses available?
I need to drag out my large spreadsheet just to remind myself of their availability.
<That's right.
laughs> I've got a very colourful one that I'm working off, but I can do that. They were mostly available for these 3 weeks, so I'd expect that.
Okay, good. Who else do I need to ask? Ms Perkins, who's not here.
Dr Davern as well.
And Dr Davern.
Yeah,
can you check with Dr Davern?
He's 2 weeks.
He is available?
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay. And you'll let me know about your witnesses? Oh, no. They may or may not be required.
Sorry, that's hard to work out.
Yeah, I know.
All myself. Look, I had put to my witnesses that they had to keep that entire block clear, did cause them some issues. Mm-hmm. So we will work around, Mum, what the court requires.
All right. Okay, so we'll make that reference and we'll make that referral. We are available. We'll quickly convene that at the location, which is convenient. But is it Otago or is it Christchurch?
Oh, I would have...
Dr. Davron's in Christchurch, I
yeah,
think.
We will... Yeah, McAdose. I wonder whether we might just confer over the afternoon tea break in terms of venue. It's probably fairly evenly split.
It probably is,
And I should probably also check with Mr. Wilson as to his availability, because I recall something in the back of my mind about a parallel project that was being worked in, but we'll sort that out between ourselves.
You'll sort that out.
Yes.
Let's get on to this as soon as we are able to. The constraints won't be the courts. And confer and file at 9 a.m. this morning, so in other words, do it overnight, the questions for the agenda. But it sounds like the questions... that we have discussed are indeed the questions which are supported by all council who are going to be participating on the primary sector case. Yep.
Okay, we'll have those questions circulated in a joint memorandum to file first thing tomorrow.
Okay, perfect. And you need to consult. Just put it through the lens of your experts as well. So it does sound like they've got the broad parameters, but just make sure...
Yes, if there's another question that needs to be added.
Yeah, or a more nuanced question that has been posed. Yeah, so we've got to make sure the experts are on board.
Mm. Yes.
Good. All right.
Okay. The final topic that I was going to explore with Mr. Wilson was just his comments in relation to the hydroelectricity generators, because I know he's picked up on that topic in his reply. Mm-hmm. I'd invite Mr. Wilson just to address or provide any observations in terms of the relevance of the schedule to the hydroelectricity generators, such that it might inform that second tranche of the conferencing.
Sure. So this is paragraph 56 to 59 of my evidence and reply. The main point I make there is that the schedule is designed to reflect what users are actually doing. If I can recall from Mr. Heller's evidence, the issue is that for hydroelectricity was that doesn't necessarily reflect what they might want to do in the future given wetter years, and that's a fair comment to make. We look at 5 years worth of data, and the rainfall in that data is what it is, and it will reflect what hydroelectricity generators did in those 5 years.
So the question of the date range insofar as it might apply to hydroelectricity generators might be a topic or a question on which some conferencing may be predicated.
It might be, and I guess one of the discussions might be what other data they have available.
In terms then of advancing the questions for that second tranche of conferencing, I'd respectfully suggest that Council could confer on the questions for that as well once we reach that point in time.
So that doesn't have to be 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. Irrigation's going to be big enough. But you should confer with your experts on the topic of hydro, snowmaking and...
Community. Takes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So that was all I was proposing to do by way of leading the witness through understanding the differences. Mm-hmm. There's one other matter that I do wish to cover with the witness and have him produce a further document in answer to one of the court's questions yesterday as to the duration being sought on consent applications. There is some information about that, and it's captured in a report that I'll hand up and have Mr. Wilson produce and then speak to. Do you recognise this document, Mr. Wilson?
I do.
And can you describe it for the court, please?
It's an updated copy of our deemed permit status report that's sent to MFE on a weekly basis, and it's a copy that I ran at about 8 o'clock last night.
Do you now produce that as exhibit and Council 1? Or...
Okay, so you ran it off at 8 o'clock last night,
yes.
And it's a copy of what, sorry? Didn't catch it.
Deemed permit status report that's sent to MFE on a weekly basis. So you had an earlier copy of it.
Yep, on a weekly basis. And this is just a computer-generated report, is it?
Yes.
Yep, all right.
So it should be yesterday's date on the
Yes.
What's that, 8th? Any objections, Council, to that coming in? No objections. Okay, so exhibit ORC1 is the deemed permit status as of the 8th of February 2021. Just
now,
by consent.
Now, there appears to be some additional information in that report dealing with consent duration compared to the previous iterations. Can
yes.
you step through that further information that is captured on the front page?
In terms of the changes? Or the
In terms of the terms for which consents have been sought?
So... Reading about halfway down the page is a note that says a further 124 deemed permits currently have applications. Previously that was 104. The number of who have applied for terms of 6 years or less has gone from 1 to 6. We still have 0 in the 6 to 15 camp. The consents with a term of more than 15 years has gone from 38 to 57. And consents with no expiry listed has gone down from 29 to 19.
And in terms of those consents, 57 of them with a term of more than 15 years, is there some further work being undertaken to better understand the precise detail as to the durations being sought?
Yes. So Mr. Leslie will have some further numbers on... either the exact duration being sought or putting them into some more specific buckets. He also has... there was a specific question yesterday around numbers since PC7 had been notified, and he will have those. This is only looking at deemed permits and includes applications from before the notification of PC7.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Wilson. No further questions.
Thank you. And, Councillor, have you got any questions for Mr. Wilson? No questions.
Sorry, I thought Mr. Payne was going to arrive, so I stayed in my seat. I just had a point of clarification, Mark, for Mr. Wilson around the ORC Exhibit 1. Mr. Wilson, Trustpower holds over 100 deemed permits and is seeking replacement consents for only 4 of those. How does your table or your document deal with those other 100 which Trustpower will let lapse?
So that they are included in all the totals. They'd be included in the current 332 at the top and in all the totals going down. So there are currently 188 deemed permits with no application lodged would include the Trustpower numbers.
So if that's the case, the current number, which is currently showing as 332, in reality may be something more like 230.
In terms of what needs to be replaced, yes, but we're reporting on the current position in the consent database, and those are current deemed permits,
yes.
Which, while I'm aware of that intention from Trustpower, theoretically could have an application come in.
Yes, because notice has been given to ORC, you're aware that those permits will be let lapse. Yes. Thank you, Mum. I just thought it was important to clarify
that,
because that's quite a significant number of deemed permits that no witness has actually addressed to date, that are on the books but are actually going to lapse.
Sorry, what number again?
Sorry, Commissioner. My understanding is Trustpower has about 107, but let's just say over 100, and is seeking replacement consents in respect of 4 races, which constitutes about 7 deemed permits for 4 races. And therefore, the remaining circa 100 deemed permits held by Trustpower will be let lapse from 1 October.
Okie dokie. You got a question, Mr. Standard?
I've got a couple of questions. In your summary of evidence from this morning, in paragraph 6, you refer to the application of Schedule 10.4 as resulting in a significant reduction in the paper allocation currently assigned to deemed permit and water permit holders?
Yes.
With allocation more closely reflecting actual water usage?
Yes.
Now, in your methodology, you have used in the situation of deemed permits which do not have which only have a instantaneous take limit, you've applied those as being taken at that rate 24/7.
To work out their limits, yes.
Yeah,
their paper allocation.
And now that's not an accurate reflection of what will happen in reality, is it?
No.
If you have the deemed permit was used for irrigation, it would only in fact be a small fraction of the 24/7 authorised usage.
Certainly possible, yeah.
And so in that sense, in relation to the deemed permits, that would cover, because in your evidence you say that most of the deemed permits do not have they only have an instantaneous limit on them, they don't have that.
Yes.
So that would, if you're seeking to reduce the paper allocation, for the deemed permits, isn't that a pretty big gap in the evaluation of that? Because there will still be a paper allocation for all those permits. It's not actually going to be used.
Well, I think that's what I specify in my evidence summary in paragraph 6, where, and certainly in my evidence in chief, that the paper allocation of those deemed permits is significantly higher than what most of those deemed permits use. And so using Schedule 10A4, they will get a number which is closer to what they actually use, which potentially could be quite far from their paper allocation.
So the paper allocation is still potentially much less than the actual usage. Sorry, the paper allocation is potentially much more than the actual usage.
Currently.
Wouldn't a better way of going about doing it be work out what the average usage is actually going to be and then apply that through Schedule 10.4 rather than the instantaneous maximum applied 24/7?
Sorry, I'm not following this. So the goal of this schedule is to reduce the paper allocation.
Correct.
And the proposition that you put earlier is that the paper allocation is not reduced in what circumstance? Where there's no daily, monthly or annual volume.
Where there's only an instantaneous volume.
Where there's only an instantaneous. And so the question is, therefore, what is to happen where there is no daily, monthly or annual volume? And isn't there a method in the schedule for that? What's to happen if there's not one on a consent?
Yes, there is.
There is one, yeah.
And the method is you assume it 24/7.
Oh, I see what you're getting at.
Yes, because legally that's what they can do.
Okay, so if If the deemed permit was used for irrigation, and let me know if I'm stepping outside your area of expertise, if the deemed permit was used for irrigation, would it be possible to work out what a proportion of that paper allocation would be?
I think there'd be a number of complicating factors in there, for example, whether the deemed permit's feeding a water race or whether it's being pumped straight out of a river in a pipe take. We can work out how much on average people are using, but that it's not quite what Schedule 10A4 does, but effectively Schedule 10A4 is a method to work out how much water they're using.
But it's not if it's based on an assumption which says that these takes are being used 24/7, when the reality is that they're not.
Well, that's only the method used for excluding data. So it's saying if they have taken more than they could have taken if they were pumping for 24/7, then exclude the data. Otherwise, it's legitimate taking and consider it in your calculation of how much they're using.
The problem is then that you're not eliminating the paper allocation because the paper allocation is still there. If you're working on an assumption of 24/7 use, you haven't removed the paper allocation.
That 24/7 use is only used for eliminating data, and we're not. To be clear, we're only seeking to remove the paper allocation if it's not being used. So if someone is using their paper allocation, then they would get their paper allocation back through the methodology.
But the point you make in your evidence is that the deemed permits don't use the instantaneous take all the time.
In most cases, there are 300-plus deemed permits, and I haven't delved through the records for all of them.
Okay, well, perhaps the better way to ask your questions is to refer the witness to, say, the daily volume limit. The methodology for calculating the daily volume limit, which is under 10A.4.2, and in particular step one, which is the methodology that is to apply, as I understand it, to a deemed permit where there is no monthly, and then to explore whether your understanding about 24-hour 7 days a week actually comes under that methodology, or does it come under some other process or some other step?
So in paragraph 40 of his evidence in chief, if you go to your evidence in chief in paragraph 40, in paragraphs 40 and 41, you know that while deemed permits have a rate of take, most do not have any volume limits. When calculating existing volume limits, the assumption is made that water can be taken 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Yes.
And then you go on to say, in practice, most deemed permits do not take water this often, meaning that their actual water use is much lower than their theoretical on-paper allocation.
Yes.
So if we are to apply that, then your desired outcome of removing the paper allocation doesn't work with respect to the deemed permits that only have a rate of take limit but not other limits.
But it does, because they will, through Schedule 10A4, the limit on the replacement consent will be what they've actually used, which is different from the limit I'm calculating as the maximum limit on the deemed permit.
Sorry, you'll have to go through it.
So Schedule 10A4 steps through a methodology, which says your new limit will be what you've actually used.
Yep.
So paragraph 40 refers only to where there's no volume limit spelled out, at what level do we start removing data from our analysis. So legally, a deemed permit holder can take up to their rate of take 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Where they don't do that, then the limit on their replacement consent will be lower after it's set through the methodology.
Where they don't take 24 hours, 7 days, which is probably most of them.
Which will be the majority, I can't speak to all of them, and there will be some that race water on a relatively consistent basis.
And so the clause that I put to you, which is it suggested that council should refer to, just by way of example, which is Schedule A, 10A.4.2 methodology pertaining to daily volumes, step one or clause one, actually in your text. It's in the... it's attached to Mr... Palesmaker's evidence.
Yes.
I'm going to call him Tom because it's my... Tom's evidence. That's... Have you got that in front of you,
the methodology?
Yep. Yeah. Okay, so is that assuming that you're going to be granting back 24 hours, seven days a week?
No, it's assuming that the water can legally be used 24 hours, 7 days a week. So when we talked about the filtering over exceedances, that sets your level for what an exceedance is.
Yeah.
The methodology then carries on and says, and you cut off everything above that line, and the methodology then carries on and says your new limit is wherever you fit. At or below that line.
Mm. Okay, so there's a legal exceedance limit, and then there's INREA, but historically for deemed permits, this is what you're using on a daily, monthly, and annual basis.
Yes.
And for most people, it will not be 24 hours, 7 days a, 7 days a week.
Yeah.
It just can't be. Nobody irrigates that way, that I'm aware, but I might be wrong.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So probably no issue, if that's how it works. Okay, thank you. Alrighty, I don't think we've got any questions, do we? No questions, so thank you very much. That was really helpful. Oh, no, sorry, Mr. Page, you did. Sorry, everybody popped up but you.
I thought you invited questions about the exhibit.
Oh, well, yes, or actually anything in general. If some point that had been said that was not quite right,
no,
we should be getting it right.
No, we're in the odd position of mostly agreeing with what Mr. Wilson said so far. So.
All right, the exhibit.
So, no, Mr. Wilson, can I ask you to address the table on the second and third pages of Exhibit ORC1? Did you put this table together?
I didn't. It's a script written by Mr. Leslie, and then I ran it last night.
Right, okay. Well, let me ask you questions about the column. And if you don't know, because you don't know how the script works, just tell me. The middle column has the heading Deemed Permits Awaiting Application. Do you see that? And my questions are directed towards what is included.
Yes. So, as I understand it, and Mr. Leslie may be able to give you a more detailed answer, but it is consents for applications that have made it as far as the lodge, so accepted under Section 88.
Ah.
So it doesn't include received applications, which would be a number of the Manuhira Care.
Excellent. Thank you. That was all I needed to know.
All right. Thank you. Anything arising, Mr. Moore? No. All right. Thank you. So thank you very much for your evidence. Thank you. Oh, sorry, Ms. Irving.
No questions for Ms. Wilson.
Right, okay.
I'm just thinking about the feedback process for the conferencing and conscious of the fact that neither Ms. Perkins or Ms. Bright from LandPro are here and so won't have had the benefit of listening to the discussion that's occurred today. And so in terms of getting them the list of questions and getting any feedback from them about whether those require additions or adjustments, whether it might be useful to give them 24 hours to listen to the audio from today and then provide any feedback to the conference list. But we're not acting for land programs.
No, I know, I know. And I know Ms. Perkins is not here, which in some ways is surprising because the ORC witnesses are here and that there's major differences in their approach, which isn't your problem at all. You're just like, what do you think?
Transcript
would be better, but transcript's not actually available for 48
hours.
I would have thought Ms. Perkins should be sufficiently au fait with the differences now.
Yes, and the same would go for Ms. Bright, I would suggest. I mean, they've read the council evidence, they've put their own evidence forward. They should understand precisely where the differences lie. We should, of course, circulate the list of questions to them, and provided they have an opportunity to consider that overnight, I would have thought we should be in a position to file tomorrow morning.
I still think file tomorrow morning will get them to them overnight and perhaps signal, if somebody... Cathy, if you could signal to Ms. Perkins that it's coming.
Could they just be given the opportunity to reserve the right?
They will anyway, because
the process will
continue to work
that
on those.
Yes.
These things aren't cast in concrete.
No,
Ross will be, and it will be working.
Because when we get to conferencing, quite often there's a bit of an adjustment.
Maybe. Yes, and rightly so, as they work through. So.
And if the date set, so the transcript will be available for them to read before the actual day. Meeting, that would be
also, Mr. Dolman needs to read the transcript as well, so it's not going to be before the transcript is here.
But in terms of capturing the topics on which there are differences, I would have thought they would be able to assist very quickly if there was something obvious missing from the list.
Yep, no, so. I agree. So still 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. It's not cast in concrete. These things change and change again as we work through the conference, and certainly Mr. Dunlop will be in charge of that process.
Very good. Well, I now call Mr. Leslie.
I do.
Do you confirm that your full name is Sean William Leslie?
I do.
And you're a systems and information analyst at the Otago Regional Council?
Correct.
And you've prepared a statement of evidence in chief dated 7 December 2020?
Correct.
And a statement of evidence in reply dated 19 February 2021?
Correct.
And you've set out your qualifications and experience in paragraphs 3 to 5 of your evidence in chief?
Correct.
Are there any corrections that you wish to make to those statements of evidence?
Yes, in my evidence in chief, in paragraph 17 and again in paragraph 46, I refer to the maximum average rather than the average maximum.
Which line?
Paragraph 17, line 3.
And so it should read, sorry?
It should read average maximum rather than maximum average.
Mr. Leslie. So if you read the line 3, annual volumes, presently reads annual volumes from the water years analysed, comma, or the maximum annual. We on the same version? That could be.
I am so sorry. I appear to have ignore paragraph 17. It's in paragraph 46 only.
Okay, 46.
On page 8.
Paragraph 46. So instead of the second line, instead of maximum average, it should read average maximum.
That's correct, yes.
Okay.
Thank you. Are there any other matters for correction?
Yes, I repeat the same error in paragraph 46 paragraph 24 of my evidence in reply.
So line 3.
And line 7.
Paragraph 24, line 7.
Yep, yes.
So average maximum, not maximum average.
Correct.
And that was both on line 3 and on line 7 of
correct.
That paragraph. Mm-hmm. Any other corrections?
No, thank you.
So subject to those corrections, do you confirm that your evidence is true and correct to the best of your knowledge and ability?
Yes.
Now, you've prepared a summary of the key points from your evidence, and a copy of that will just be handed around. I'll have you read your summary, and then I'll put to you some questions on the document that Mr. Wilson had just handed up.
That off you as well. I seem to have brought everybody else's summaries except for mine to the table.
That's all right. We've got a CY. Oh, thank you, Mr. Page.
Thank you.
Yes, if you could proceed with your summary.
My name is Sean William Leslie. I have worked at the Otago Regional Council since 2008 in a number of roles which focused on the numerical analysis of performance monitoring data submitted to the ORC as the consent authority in response to conditions on resource consents. I developed a process for analysing water taken under resource consent as part of a broader work program within the ORC. In response to a request from the consents team, I adapted this process to provide a description of water take data for the consents team to consider in their decision making when preparing recommendations for resource consent applications under the Regional Plan Water for Otago. A procedurally generated report provides information relating to the rate of take, daily volume, monthly volume and annual volume, as well as information relating to the 80th, 90th and 95th percentiles for the rate of take. My involvement in PC7 was to provide technical input to assist with development of the Schedule 10A4 methodology, which involved some further calculations added to the existing consenting process, and to provide feedback on how the technical detail was translated to policy. Additionally, I developed and maintained script automations that the ORC uses for assessing patterns in water taking to ensure that this is done in a reproducible and objective way. The evidence in chief and evidence in reply that I have provided the court primarily covers the practical application of Schedule 10A4 and attempts to provide some insight as to the expected results of its application compared to the method currently employed under the Regional Plan Water for Otago. My evidence demonstrates the need to remove atypical data from the data sets before they are processed, as once this is done, there is a high degree of consistency between the results produced under the water plan method and the method proposed in Schedule 10A4, despite the fact that the water plan method is subjective, while the Schedule 10A4 method is objective. In addition to that, I touch on some of In addition to that, I touch on some of the issues involved in developing a method to implement and illustrate some examples where it is not the method that is flawed but the assumptions about the underlying data. Also examine the impact that flawed assumptions about underlying data might have on any out-of-the-box analysis backed by anonymised data using real water meters and data that is routinely provided to the consents team to provide context for their decision-making processes.
Thank you, Mr. Leslie. Now, Mr. Wilson handed up a document, or produced a document entitled Deemed Permit Status, the rerun Deemed Permit Report rerun last evening. And I asked him whether some further work was being done to understand the 57 consents for which a term of more than 15 years had been sought. He indicated that you might be doing some further work on that. Are you in a position to provide any further evidence in relation to the duration of consent sought, or is that piece of work ongoing?
I'm in a position to be able to provide some insight. So I used the SQL script that the DEM permit status report uses as its basis, made some minor modifications to it so that it gave me the raw data. And I can tell you that there is four applications with a term of 1 year, six applications with a term of 6 years, three applications with a term of 10 years, 11 applications with a term of 15 years, 10 applications with terms between 16 and 20 years, 20 applications with terms between 21 and 25 years, and 65 applications with terms of 35 years. And these are applications that have been received or lodged with the Otago Regional Council since the Plan Change 7 was notified.
Thank you. Now, were you here when Mr. Wilson was answering some questions this morning in relation to some topics for conferencing that might assist understand the differences between the various methods being pursued by parties?
Yes.
Do you recall that I put a question to Mr. Wilson about whether a data set could be constructed to test some differences between the methods in terms of what the actual, real-life output would be under different methodologies?
Yes.
And based on your knowledge and experience and understanding of the data sets that are available, could a data set be readily made available in order to test some of those differences between the methods being sought?
Potentially, yes, and some of that is addressed in my evidence for reply.
And just picking up on that, for example, in your reply evidence, you have analysed some 23, I think it was, of the 42 or 43 records that the Land Pro witness had relied on to examine some differences between the method.
Yes.
And so in terms of practically being able to test those differences in conferencing, the data is readily available and you would be able to test and see the differences in the conferencing room?
Potentially, yes.
Yes. Thank you. I have no further questions at this juncture, so if you could please remain for any questions from the court or from my friends.
LandPro uses a different data set from you?
They don't. It's my understanding they don't use a different data set from me, but they use a different method of analysing the same data. But also the pool of consents that they examined in their evidence was was slightly different from what I examined in my evidence. So the consents that I examined in my evidence were a subset of the land pro consents that met certain criteria that made trying to do a bulk analysis easier.
Yeah, and you set out the criteria in your evidence.
Yes.
And by and large, they're pretty straightforward sort of resource consents to be testing the methodology against. Would that be fair? I mean, that's
yes.
why you selected the criteria.
Yeah, that's why I chose them.
So consents outside of those really straightforward sample, should they also not be tested to see how the methodology would or could be, yeah, would be applied to them?
Absolutely. However, doing any form of bulk analysis, like in my reply evidence, I looked at, I think it was slightly over 400. So doing that kind of analysis becomes more difficult because, for example, if you've got a situation where you have one resource consent or one deemed permit that has two water meters associated with it, you've got to, depending on the conditions on the resource consent, you have to look at the rates of take of potentially both water meter individually as well as the combined rates of take or volumes.
You looked at 400 because Lampro had, or because that was... Lampro's actually one of the cases that I haven't read. I've read what their relief is, but I have left off reading their Ms. Perkins' evidence. You've looked at 400 because that's what they did, or that's... or for what reason?
The catchments that I looked at were based on the catchments that Lampro specified in their evidence. I did that because at that point it wasn't clear whether or not I was going to be able to get the information that I needed from Lampro, and also that I could compare my result, you know, my information and my methods to their information and their methods. So I took the starting point of just casting the given those criteria, casting the broadest blanket possible that would capture as many of their permits as possible, so that I could go back and do a comparison of their method to the method I currently employ, or the methods that have been proposed or notified under Plan Change 7.
And so you're using the one data set? Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. And that, and by data set you mean what?
The method I employed downloaded the from ORC's water meter database, downloaded the full length of the water meter record for each of those water meters, and then it the method that I currently use analyzes the whole data set rather than just a subset of the data set. So I performed my analysis, and then applied method 10A4, so subsetting it so that it looked at the looked at the irrigation years as they were notified in the irrigation years according to Mr. DePasmarca's amendments.
So what I would find useful is to have the methodologies tested, as I think you've been endeavouring to do, to test the methodologies against a number of scenarios, both including the straightforward consent scenario, one take, one meter, versus often what might happen, which is two points of take, more than 1 meter, so we can see how each of the methodologies are performing, if I could put it that way. Is it possible. So one of the things I'd be wanting to know is what scenarios, can the experts agree what scenarios should be tested and what data sets might apply to test the scenarios? That, I think, involves direct communication to see how each of the, you know, the two groups, which is LAMPRO and OREG, are coming at, I guess, the community of interest. Whether it is the narrow community, this is a simple exercise, you know, it's a simple take or simple consent, versus much more complex scenarios which the method might apply to. So is it possible to actually talk to your counterpart witnesses to see, you know, directly, not by email, you know, actually talk to people to see what is the most efficient, effective way of testing the different methods?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, we did receive from, I started my analysis on the assumption that I wasn't going to get the information from LAMPRO or wasn't going to get the information from LAMPRO in time. But we did receive the information about which resource consents and which water meters they had analysed in their evidence, which enabled me to perform the comparisons that I did. But there were there were scenarios that were examined by LAMPRO that included multiple resource consents across single water meters or single consents across multiple water meters, which were, as I said, outside the scope of my selection criteria.
Yeah, and that's where I'm guiding you to,
yeah.
It's actually to get everybody be on the same page. What are the scenarios that we're examining? Because the LAMPRO scenarios, it seems to me, are valid scenarios. If the method is to apply to them, how well does that method then perform is the question.
Hmm.
Yeah. So that would need to be done, you know, in terms of equipping yourself before you go into an expert conference. There would need to be that discussion. What are the scenarios that we are testing? Maybe against current consents, that's probably where the existing consents, where the data probably exists, for, especially for metering. What are the scenarios? What are the representative scenarios that we are testing? And what information needs to be provided and by when? And to allow that, the three parties to go away and do the testing.
I would add to that that we also need to agree on different consent uses as well. So, for example, we need to make sure that we have a supplementary take. For example, included in whatever data sets we look at, we need to ensure that we have a resource consent that we know is taking water for frost fighting, and to cover off those sorts of scenarios so that we can have a look at what patterns there are.
Mm. Good. Well, that sounds reasonable. So this is pre-conference engagement, absolutely critical. Don't go to the conference and expect everything just to unfold. It won't, unless there's actually quite some degree of preparation done. And that, I think, involves communication, direct communication, as between the witnesses, to work out what is the representative, what is that data set, and what are the case scenarios that are being tested, and to ensure that they are representative of the, you know, the way that this, any one of those three methodologies may be employed going into the future. Does that sound like a lot of work, or does it sound like, you know?
It sounds fair and reasonable.
Fair and reasonable. Good. Okay.
as for how many hours of overtime, I'll be having that discussion with my manager at a later date.
Yeah. Okay. So just putting a sort of time frame around that, though, is that sort of like a, you know, by the end of the week job? Is it by the end of 2 week job? You know, just even from your perspective, not to worry about LAMPRO and ORAG, but from your perspective about how much time to get a defensible data set suggestions about what is the data set and representative sample that you're going, or case scenarios that you're going to be testing.
To be perfectly honest with you, I'm not 100% sure.
Ah, well, that'll be imposed. Yeah.
Because I think mean, we're familiar with a lot of the consents that have gone in that I think will pick up on the issues that we're talking about. So I suspect that between ORUG and MANPRO, we'll be able to identify a suite of consents that perhaps cover the field in terms of the issues that might arise, which we could provide to Mr. Leslie to have a look at and see whether he has any others from his other applicants that he'd like to throw in as well. But I don't think that's going to be difficult.
You don't think so?
We're
okay.
Dealing with this all the time.
Yep, all right. You happy with that? That those two parties go first and yeah.
Forward and insofar as other parties are aware of a consent that might be a little bit different, and the frost fighting one strikes me as one that's important to capture, one of those examples. It will be useful to have those suggestions, and I think it will be consent number and possibly the water meter record number. So, yeah, I'd simply invite other parties as quickly as possible. How realistically, how quickly?
I think I can probably do it tonight.
Right. So we're not just talking about infrastructure, we're also talking about within the primary sector also, you know, making sure you've got dairy or sheep and beef, making sure you've got grapes and frostbiting and yeah, but yeah, not to kill it by information overload, but it's just testing the veracity and effectiveness of the three methodologies.
Yes, and I think, well, optimistically, it should hopefully flush out the differences in terms of what comes out.
Yeah.
But also test whether the method can actually be applied to the very consents that are going to be the subject of renewal.
So. Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Yep.
Can I ask a couple of questions?
Yep.
I just in terms of this process, in your conclusion to your reply evidence, you've put down three or four comments. I just, so it's on page 17, or the version I have anyway. Have you got that there?
Yes, I've got it. Yep.
So in 90, you qualify the quick and easy cost-effective solution where the necessary data is available. Can you just expand or tell us a little about where the data is not available, and is that a frequent occurrence or not? Do you know?
I've dealt with applications that have as little as one season of recorded data available, and they were applications that were that were being replaced, that were for to renew for an existing activity. Obviously, I can't analyse what isn't there.
I mean, do you, in your work, is the necessary data usually available, or is it a, can there be, you know, percentage that don't have the data, and then what do you do?
I do have that information, but I do have the information to answer that question, but I don't have it at my fingertips right at the moment. Usually my response when I encounter a short data set is to complete the write-up and then emphasise in my summary at the end of the document that the data has a low reliability because it's a short data set.
So does it become a matter of disagreement between you and the applicant or whoever's processing the application, consultant or whoever it might be, as to how you deal with that situation?
I haven't had any feedback from the consents team that I can recall that would indicate that taking that approach is an issue.
Okay.
or has caused any issues.
So that's your...
It's the best answer I can give you to the question, yeah.
That's okay. And the second thing you say, that there may be using the method, may not be flaws in the method where there's problems, but flaws in the assumptions or methods employed by whom?
Well, by any party examining the data, regardless of whether you're talking about Lampro's method, O-Rug's method, or the notified version, or Mr. De Palsmarker's amendments, or even my own version, every data analysis has assumptions built into it. The best you can do is try and minimise the assumptions. So
is this something you'd discuss at the expert conference?
I would expect so.
Yeah, pretty important to try and get some understanding between the various experts. Okay. And para 92, you talk about percentiles. Do percentiles, are they applicable to schedule, the new plan change method?
Not directly, but it was my intention that, short of directives otherwise, that I would continue to provide them to the consents team, because they provide additional context. Because if I just present you with a maximum average value, that's just a number. It doesn't mean anything on its own. But if you can see at a glance that the 90th percentile, the 95th percentile, and the maximum average value are all clustering around the previously consented rate, then you can see that there's a really good case to be made that the previously consented rate is applicable, descriptive, valid, justifiable. Does that answer your question?
So that's the information you would provide, even though it's... And that's the way you've operated under the current water plan too?
Yes.
And then the consents team take a decision based on the advice you give them?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, well, I just wanted to get some clarification there, so thank you, Your Honour.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I'm going to say by the end of the week for that conferring to happen, Council having conferred with their experts to propose scenarios for testing under the three methods, and also to identify an appropriate data set which is to be tested, and the scenarios to include at least the different methods of irrigation and different land uses. I think that's probably broad enough to capture all of the main interests. Don't know, Mr. Reid, is that okay? And I can't actually remember what your witness is going to say about the schedule.
That sounds fine to me.
That sounds fine?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Just that I'm not sure that frost fighting is accurately described as a land use, but
no.
So long as that activity is
it's
captured,
in there. Yeah, okay. All right. Very good. So we're taking adjournment for 15 minutes. Thank you. Oh, and your no further follow-up questions, we can release the witness.
From me, no.
Anyone else? No one else? Okay, so thank you very much for your evidence, and you're free to go. Thank you.
All rise.